Well, thank you. Thank you again for having me this week. It's so good to be here. So good to be here. And can everyone hear me? Hear me good and loud and clear? And so I'm going to remind everyone. Hello, hello. I'm going to remind everyone. If you have a question, please raise your hand or type one on the message board, and I'd be happy to speak more deeply about whatever it is on your mind. So I thought we'd start again by just dropping into our body, letting go of the day, letting go of the week or the weekend. Really connecting with this peace that we are. And so to connect with this peace, I invite you to step back out of the everyday consciousness, the thinking mind, to let go of that, to step back into this place of peace, this space in which all thoughts arise. Just notice the sound of my voice. Notice the sound of the room. And to notice the sound of silence. And if your eyes are open, I invite you to look with your eyes in a new way, where you're feeling with your eyes, feeling a deep sense of peace, a sense of spaciousness that's right here, right now. Notice all the objects in the room, but I invite you to notice the space in which the objects arise, the space in which the sound of my voice arises, the space in which your thoughts arise. Just notice this space, and I invite you to notice that the space of your mind and the space of the room are actually one space. One space. Can you notice that? That there's no difference between the space of your mind and the space of this room. Give yourself permission to really feel into this. To feel the space in your body. You can feel the space in your feet, your calves, your shins, your knees. Just notice that your feet are seated here, absolutely quiet, absolutely silent. They're not struggling. They're not fighting with this or that. They're not even trying to understand. And so I invite you just to feel, just to experience, just to notice. Just notice. What does it feel like in the consciousness of your body? The consciousness of your legs? Can you feel this quiet sense of aliveness? It's already absolutely peaceful. We don't have to do anything. We don't have to go anywhere. I encourage you to feel into, to include the rest of your body. So feel your pelvis. Of course, if there's any tension in your pelvis or any of the chakra centers or anywhere in your body, I invite you to notice the peace, the sense of aliveness, the gentle sense of divinity, which is right here, right now. And if there's any tension, I invite that tension to unravel, to let go, to release into this peace, into this peace. So you're breathing, feeling, experiencing. So we're acknowledging the hara, the space a couple inches below the belly button, and inward about 3 inches. We're breathing deep, full belly breaths and relaxing there. Invite you to relax the solar plexus. Take some breaths there. Sometimes we can be holding on and gripping in the solar plexus and the hara and the pelvic floor. And I invite you, just as a good yoga teacher invites us to feel into our body, to relax the tension, and then to notice what's truly here. Notice what's truly here, directly here. Notice the very space of your being. What is your presence like? In your feet, in your legs, your thighs, your shins, your calves, your pelvis, your hara, your solar plexus. And of course, we can take another deep, full breath and open the heart. I invite you very much to acknowledge your heart, your human heart, to acknowledge if you're carrying any emotions, now's the time to let them unravel into the space of satsang, into the space of peace. Allow whatever it is that's been troubling you to unravel. Certainly nothing we need to be thinking about right now. Now is the time to breathe fully, to experience fully, to enjoy your very presence, your very nature. What is it? What is it that's beautiful about you? What is it that's pure and spacious and radiant and alive? What is it? What's here right now? And so I invite you to step into this, to let go into this. Give yourself full permission to experience that which is radiant, that which is spacious, that which is peaceful, and yes, that which is silent. If there's anything that's troubling you, we don't fight with it, we don't transcend it, we invite it forward so that it may release, it may unravel into the hugeness of your being. The hugeness. And so in this moment, if you allow the walls to dissolve between you and life, between you and the chair, between you and the floor, between you and the space of the sky, can you notice how huge you are? Sounds a little bit silly to say, but if you really feel into your nature, notice there's no beginning and no end to it. Can you notice how huge you are? Can you give yourself permission to expand, to be vast, like the Buddha? Vast like the night sky. And see for yourself if you are one with all of life. See if that is true. See that there is no beginning and no end to you. That in your direct experience, who and what you are is huge. Even if you have a little ego in the space of your consciousness, even if you have thoughts about this thing or that thing, can you notice the space in which your thoughts arise? How big is that space? How big is your presence if you give yourself permission to be the immensity that you are? Sometimes when I open this way, I shock myself. I surprise myself. And I see how big it is that I am. But I notice how big it is that we are. We human beings. We don't give ourselves enough credit. We are too busy giving credit to our egoic consciousness and saying, I'm this rotten scoundrel, or I'm an engineer, or a doctor, or a judge, or a lawyer, whatever it is. No one ever teaches us that it's okay to let go of that little egoic identity and to step into the hugeness of what we are. The world doesn't need any more small people, any more limited egoic people. The world needs individuals who are willing to be big, to be vast, to be loving. And that doesn't mean we have to think we're the next Messiah. But can we be big in our own divine way, in our everyday practical reality? Can we allow our lights to shine? Can we allow our hearts to love as fully as they want to love? Can we allow our presence to come forward in a huge way? A huge way. And can we start this work with ourselves? With ourselves. I've met many individuals on the path who've realized some level of truth and who've wanted to go out and teach and, in a sense, to proselytize, to save the world. But what I found is we can't do much saving until we have first saved ourselves. Until we've met every aspect of our humanity with love, with a gentleness, with a compassion, and yes, sometimes a discipline. Sometimes some aspects of ourselves need a little straightening out. But the discipline, it must always come from a place of love. And so, if we want to shine our light to the world, it's important that we shine our light first upon ourselves, upon our own nature. That we've healed and worked with our major core wounds. And the beautiful thing is the more we sit with ourselves, the more we learn how to work with others, how to work with our children, our partners, our mothers and fathers, sisters and brothers. We learn to work with others by first working with ourselves, with working with our own sadness, our own suffering. We learn to support it by first supporting ourselves. And so, what does supporting ourselves look like? Well, very much what we're doing right now. We're experiencing the goodness of our hearts, the purity of our hearts, the brilliance of our hearts. We're giving ourselves permission to be the hugeness of our true nature. One of the great gifts that my teacher gave to me was that he saw my hugeness. And he saw it clearly. He acknowledged that I wasn't just some silly young kid who was lost in the world. He simultaneously acknowledged my absolute divinity. And the beautiful thing about meeting with a true teacher is they see who you are. They see who you are in the depth of your true nature, and the depth of your humanity and everything in between. And they love you unconditionally. It's beautiful to be seen in this way. It's so healing, so therapeutic. And so I invite us all to give this gift to ourselves, to see ourselves fully, to love ourselves fully. In every aspect of ourself, the no good, rotten parts of our humanity, our everyday mundaneness, our wonderful human qualities and our absolute divine presence. Can we love it all? Can we love it all? If we want to bring ourselves into total integration with truth, we must learn to love every aspect of ourselves. Integration happens through loving ourselves, through absolutely loving ourselves. The good, the bad, the ugly. If we don't want to integrate, and we should ignore and deny our humanity. If we walk far on the spiritual path and don't integrate, we start having amazing awakening experiences. And then we look at our life, and our life is a train wreck, an absolute train wreck. And I can humbly admit I was one of those individuals who was awakening to the depth of my true nature. And yet simultaneously, my outer life was a train wreck. I used to look at God and say, God, you straighten this out. You straighten this out. And God sat back silently and let me fall again and again and again. I began to wonder, why is God not coming in and taking over my life and handling all my daily problems and my relationships and my work life and my financial affairs and my children and everything else? Why isn't God handling all this? For many of us, when we awaken, we can go through a healing crisis that's quite difficult. I was speaking with someone this last week, and she and her friend both had went and visited with Eckhart Tolle on a retreat. And they were having these incredible awakening experiences. Incredible experiences. But then came forth the healing crisis. Spiritual awakening brings forth everything which is unintegrated within us. And it invites it into a space of love. People have this idea that to be awake means to not feel and to not experience any of their humanity ever again. It's the so-called end of suffering. But suffering does not end because our humanity disappears. Suffering ends because we embrace this evolutionary world. We embrace all the darkness and shadows within us. We stop fighting with it. And we start loving it all. And in a sense, true nirvana is about loving your shadow to death. Loving it to death. For when you love your shadow, when you love all the so-called negative aspects of your humanity, they begin to heal, integrate, dissolve. Nothing dissolves through transcendence. The ego dissolves through love. Through love. So the true nirvana comes through embracing every aspect of your shadow, every aspect of your humanity. And you begin to discover that who and what you are is good, is divine. And that your human form, your human soul, has given birth into an evolutionary world. And you are happy to evolve, happy to heal. Happy that there's no end to it, because you are one with God, and God too is a force of evolution. So we don't have some magical thought, some type of fantasy thinking, where we come into a place where nothing ever exists again. Nothing ever arises again. What doesn't arise is our resistance to suffering, our resistance to growth, our resistance to healing, our resistance to transformation. That's what true nirvana is. Is not going to a place where nothing arises again. That doesn't exist. It exists in a heaven world, but not here on earth. This is an evolutionary world, a world of growth. And because we're one with all of life, we are one with all the layers of every consciousness on the planet. If we think that we've made it to some ultimate resting point, well, then we obviously are not connected with the collective consciousness of the rest of humanity. Because when we're done with ourselves, or we think we're done with ourselves, we can begin to work on what Sri Aurobindo called the rest of the species. The work is endless on this plane. But when your heart is open and you include all, you begin to notice the nature of the heart is simply to love. Simply to love, and love never stops. It continues shining outward. It continues embracing outward. It continues embracing and including in every direction. In every direction. If any of you hang out with the true nature, you see that their life, their life is sitting with individuals in suffering. Very few masters choose to go sit in a cave and ignore humanity. So the question is not, how do we avoid suffering? How do we get to some island where suffering doesn't exist? Can we create an intentional community where everyone's on their best behavior? I can tell you, I've been to many spiritual communities. And most spiritual communities are very much like the real world. They're full of all kinds of crazy individuals, all kinds of suffering individuals, all kinds of deluded individuals. Now, they may have good intentions on spiritual awakening and spreading love and light and happiness and joy. But if you visit a spiritual community, you will probably be very much let down. that this is not an island where all the awakened people are living together and everyone is speaking in hushed tones and being very polite and very sweet and gentle with each other. Spiritual communities are oftentimes, actually the opposite, they oftentimes are pressure cookers because so many individuals are practicing together. And when we practice together, there's an intensity in the room, an intensity in the group, an intensity in your very nature, where the darkness is being expelled from your nature. And sometimes it comes out in a messy way, a dramatic way. My teacher used to always laugh at me. He said, "Craig, you have an unusually dramatic life." Of course, things have changed. Now my life is unusually boring, which I really, really enjoy. Well, I was intensely on the path and studying with my teacher. He would just look at my life. He'd say, "Craig, you have so much drama, so much confusion, so many, messy relationships and things going this way and that way." I tried to act like I had it all together, but my teacher saw right through it. It was beautiful. Because then he could straighten me out. He could teach me to love it all. It's funny, many times in my life I would try to blame others when I spoke with him. And he always forced me to take total responsibility for my life. It drove me absolutely crazy. He made me take responsibility for everything. But if we truly want to be awake in the world, if we want to live beyond victim consciousness, we must take total responsibility for our life. Total responsibility for our reactions, our reactivity, for our shadow, for our lack of love, our lack of humility. We must take total responsibility for our pride, our arrogance. Our sense of superiority or feelings of inferiority. It's one of the things I really struggled with on the path is I felt as if I was totally inferior, never good enough. And so some days my teacher would just build me up, spend his time just building me up. And that was very helpful to have the support of someone looking at me and seeing and believing in me. Even when I was at my worst, he would believe in me. It's one of the things I try to do with my sisters when I see them. I see their divinity. I believe in it. I have faith in them. I have faith in you. We've had too many people in our lives tell us that we're no good. And if we have an ego that struggles with unworthiness, it's very easy to believe what others say about us. If we haven't spent any time connecting with the depth of our presence, it's easy to have no idea how beautiful we are. No idea. And this is why it's helpful to have a meditation practice. Meditation is a time each day where you sit in your presence without thinking, without wandering, without surfing the internet, without looking to another. We are just looking inward at our own beauty. Our own beauty. One of the favorite questions I ask. My favorite questions I ask is, do you know how beautiful you are? And so, yes, my friend, your question. If we are already true nature, why do we need to practice? Well, this is the question I ask. Do you know how beautiful you are? Are you resting there in every moment of your life? It's not that we need to practice, but your attention is always going to be somewhere. If your attention is fully rooted in your true nature, so if you experience yourself as love, as light, as spaciousness, as an absolute divinity, then yeah, you don't need to practice because you are already living your truth. You're already living it. So it all comes down to your direct experience. And that's all meditation is directly experiencing your true nature. And so if it's formal, wonderful. If it's informal, wonderful. But let us not fool ourselves. There's so many individuals I meet with in the non-dual community who think they don't need to practice. But they're not rooted in true nature. They may be rooted in the philosophy, in the mental belief that they are true nature. But if it's not your direct experience, then you may enjoy practicing. You may enjoy stepping into the hugeness of what you are. I mean, each week, I can say, each week I'm blown away by the hugeness of my nature. And it's not like it's my individual nature. Each week I'm blown away by the nature of every individual I meet with. When I see their divinity and I see how brilliant they are, how beautiful they are, I tell students all the time that me sitting with them, when I'm sitting with you, I feel blessed. I feel blessed. And so if we are rooted in true nature, when we walk around, it should feel as if we are walking around in heaven. But we are walking around among angels. Jesus himself said, the kingdom of earth is spread about the earth. The kingdom of heaven is here, spread about the earth, yet no man seeth. And people don't see it because they're not rooted in their true nature. I'm brought to tears almost every day at the absolute beauty of this world. And it's not because I live in a beautiful part of the country. I've been in New York City. And saw a man begging on the street, living in rags. And I looked into his eyes and saw God. I saw this absolute beauty looking back at me. And so when we are rooted in true nature, we see beauty. We feel vast, spacious peace. We feel flooded with light, overwhelmed with love. There's a sense of the hugeness of life. That life is absolutely divine. Absolutely divine. Many individuals, especially like I was saying in the non-dual world, they read a book by Ajahn Chah or Nisargadatta that says, I am that. They understand the philosophy, they understand the teachings, and they take a mental realization to be synonymous with the direct experience of the truth. The beautiful thing is when we read a book by a true teacher, by a master, mind becomes calm. We begin to feel the transmission of the teacher. We adopt their philosophy. It has an effect upon us. But when we truly wake up to what the teacher is sharing or transmitting, when we know it as our very self, we live in such an immensity. It literally brings us to tears daily, even in the ordinariness of life. In the ordinariness of life. A couple of hours ago, I was meeting with a father and his two children. And his children and the father were fighting, and there was all this fighting amongst the family. And the father was doing things which weren't helpful. The children were doing things which were unhelpful. The stepmom was doing things which were unhelpful. But when I looked at them all, I saw their divinity. I saw that they would all be okay. And I saw that I was speaking to myself while I was offering them guidance. It wasn't some sense that I was better than them or that I had risen above this human world. When I talked to the children, I just felt like I was speaking with myself. And so when we are rooted in true nature, we see ourselves everywhere. This is the true non-duality, the true non-dual experience. Now, most individuals, when they connect with true nature, they read a book and have a glimpse of insight. They see themselves as living in a dream, that everyone else is a dream and I'm the only one awake. That sounds very divisive if you really hear yourself say that out loud. I live in the truth and everyone else lives in a dream. It sounds like division. That's not the highest truth. I call that a mid-level truth. And so this practice of meditation, it keeps us humble. It forces us to sit with ourselves, with our direct experience. We see, am I living in the hugeness of what I am? Am I living in my Christ-like nature? Or am I sitting here struggling with thoughts and fidgeting and being judgmental? So a practice like meditation, it's a beautiful time for us to sit quietly and notice what's arising within me. What's arising in my true nature? What is it that I truly am? And what is it that I struggle with? What is it that I struggle with? And when you see your struggle, can you meet it with love? When you see the inner lawyer or the inner judge within the space of your mind, can you meet them with love? Can you invite them into the peace? It's funny, many, many years ago when I first would sit down and meditate, I'd read many books about true nature. And yes, I heard it. that God is here all the time, that God is in all things. I read that I was God. And as I would sit down in meditation, I would get glimpses of peace. And I would say, oh, yes, it's true. It's true. When I had this big glimpse, I said, it's true, I am God. But then when I looked at my everyday life, I noticed, oh, I look kind of like a train wreck. I look like a big mess. I think I'm better than, or less than. I saw that I wasn't a very good father when I first had children. I had a stepson that I really, really struggled with. He tested me in every way. And I dropped the ball often. And when I'd sit in meditation, I would notice all these things. I would ask myself, am I God or am I human? Is it possible to be both? Can I bring this humanity that I am? Can I bring it into integration with this divinity? And meditation was a time to bring these insights into integration with my humanity. To bring my humanity in alignment with my true heart. And I simply love spiritual practice because spiritual practice is a time when we say no to being busy. No to surfing the internet. No to doing that which is less than and saying yes to that which is the highest. That which is the highest within us and as us. It's a time to open to God directly. And the more you meditate, the more you open to your true nature. The more this true nature floods your life and you realize there's no beginning or end to meditation. The meditation becomes a way of life. It simply becomes a way of life where we live as true nature, where we realize there's no division between the spiritual life and the worldly life. I have so many individuals ask me this question. I say, Craig, I want to live a spiritual life. But I live in the world. I say, whose world is this? Is this not God's world? Do you not realize your suffering is your spiritual path? Do you not realize the more you run from suffering, the more you create it, the louder it gets? God doesn't let us avoid or resist or ignore or transcend anything. She does not allow this. Why does suffering repeat itself? It repeats itself because we ignore it. When you face it head on and meet it with a total love, the very thing we are suffering with unravels, it heals, it transforms. It actually becomes a strength. It becomes a divine quality. Sometimes people come to me and they put their head down. And I say, what's wrong? I say, well, I'm supposed to be spiritual, but I'm really angry. I said, good. Embrace your anger. Meet it with love. Discover the truth in anger. They look at me like I'm crazy. The truth in anger. Yes. The truth in anger is power. God wants you to discover how powerful you are. But if we don't know how powerful we are, we're normally either shut down, we're either shut down, we feel like a victim, or we're really angry. But if you begin to, and anger is actually a step in the right direction, if you're shut down, as you embrace anger and breathe through it and transform it through Tantra. People think of that as some very esoteric spiritual practice, but if you breathe into anger, feel it fully, allow it to be channeled through your body. It'll be the very energy that you need to make true change in your life. The very energy you need to stand up for truth. To straighten your life out, to get your life together in alignment with your heart, in alignment with that which is the highest. That which is the highest. I always laugh when people tell me they have anger and they're embarrassed of it. I say, well, do you know that Lord Jesus had bouts of anger? They say, oh, it's a beautiful thing about Jesus. They showed him as being human, but he worked with it. And as a result, he is a very powerful, transformative individual beyond measure. If you feel into anger, sometimes people will feel into this, say, this is too big, it's too much. That's God showing you how much power is there. If you open to the depth of it and allow that anger to unravel out of you, if you're no longer afraid of powerful feelings, you will have access. Yes, the power of light. You will have access to your power of light, your power of love, your power of truth. Your power, meaning God's power, all one power. And so this willingness to embrace the shadow. I think is a very important practice for every human being on this planet has a shadow. Every teacher has a shadow. And so back to this question, do we need to practice if we know that we are true nature? Yeah, we can know that we are true nature and have a huge shadow and create all kinds of pain and suffering in the world. I could list off many teachers, some of my colleagues, myself, I could add to that list, who has a shadow and caused pain as a result of their shadow. No matter how enlightened an individual may think they are, no matter how rooted an individual thinks they are in true nature, anything which has a form has a shadow. And a beautiful practice is to shine the light of awareness into the shadow. If we truly want to know what liberation is, we must liberate all the aspects which are unconscious within ourselves, within our humanity, within the collective consciousness, which is in us, in our very nature. And so, yes, why do we need to practice? We practice so we don't cause suffering. We practice because it's a movement of love. We practice because we love resting in the beauty and wisdom and brilliance of our own heart. Of our own heart. But practice, it doesn't have to be, you know, very constricted and tight and tense and Zen-like. You know, if we're a Zen student, then yes, practice in that way. If that's true for you. But even my teacher Adya, he went to his teacher, Jikusho Kwon, and said, This meditation practice is a little too tight for me. It's a little too serious. Is it okay if I loosen it up a little bit? And at first, Kwong told him no, because he wanted Ajahn to learn to be humble, to learn to do the practice, to let go into it, to realize its benefits. And then after a number of months, Kwong changed his answer to yes, practice in the way that resonates with your heart. And so I say both. I agree with Jikusho Kwong. Yes, we practice. And we follow practice formally. And after we've mastered the practice, if that's a possibility to master a practice, then loosen it up a little bit. Let it go. Let the practices arise from in your own heart. And to me, at that point, practice isn't practice. It becomes that way of life. The true practice is directly experiencing your heart, living in your heart, connected to your heart, and allowing your brilliance to shine out to the world. And if we're practicing that from ego, we will fail miserably. But if we're letting go into the depth of our own beauty, then a brilliant light will shine in every direction. So thank you all for having me again this wonderful Sunday night. It's funny, I was feeling I had a long weekend. I was so tired before I showed up this evening. That's one of the things that happens when we come together. Our hearts are flooded with grace. Just a little bit of attention. From a little bit of attention on our heart, and letting go of our mind, and letting go of the busyness of the day, something beautiful comes forward. And yes, yes, thank you, Regina. So this next week, I will be I'll be traveling to California. If any of you are in the Bay Area and going to the Science and Non-Duality Conference, come say hi. If any of you are going on retreat with Regina and the Awakening Together group, please enjoy yourself. My heart will be there as well. And yes, I'll be back in 2 weeks. When I get back from my trip, I want to have a little bit of time at the conference and meeting with a bunch of friends and teachers, colleagues. I always have a great time going. If any of you have a chance, please join us at the Science of the Non-Duality Conference. It's a wonderful place with many, many great teachers. And yeah, I'll be back in 2 weeks. So thank you all so much. May peace be with you all. May the highest light shine through our heart and out to all of this world. Thank you again for having me. Peace be with you.